T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back to KMOX. Mark Reardon is on vacation today. Actually, I think he was talking last week about him going out to Vegas. So he should be back here in the saddle with you tomorrow. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon this afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Hey, before I get through all of the stuff that we've got here to go through in the next couple of hours, I do need to mention one thing or I'm in big trouble. And that is happy birthday to my wife, Carol. And, you know, it's amazing. She's still 29 and love to see that happen. So happy birthday, Carol. And we will be celebrating, going out to dinner this evening, of course, being socially distant, as you're supposed to do. But we will be going out for dinner this evening. I had something funny happen over the weekend. You know, usually when I'm here on KMOX, I'm the legal analyst talking about legal issues. And so when I tell you I'm in a deposition, I don't want you to think there's anything wrong with that. That's what I do on a weekly basis. But, you know, since the pandemic has started, there hasn't been a lot of depositions going on. So we're just now kind of getting back into the course of practice of taking depositions. So I go to Chicago for a deposition on Friday. And I'm going to tell you this story because I think it just embodies some of the silly regulations that we have to deal with because of COVID. Now, a lot of them are not silly. I'm not mocking social distancing. I'm certainly not mocking the use of masks when appropriate or certainly washing your hands. But, you know, governments just can't stop themselves from enacting regulations. So it goes beyond just government. It's even any bureaucracy, which can even be in the private sector. So I'm walking into this deposition. Now, this deposition is my expert doctor that I've hired in a case. And so I walk in and there's this clerk at the beginning, when you walk into the office, who's taking everyone's temperature. You've probably had that happen yourself where you walk into a place of business or an establishment and they check your temperature. Fine, not a problem. And of course, I'm wearing a mask. So I walk in and the person says to me, "Have you been outside of the state of Illinois in the past 2 weeks?" Now, I said, "Yeah, I was in Missouri 6 hours ago." Because this deposition was in Chicago. So I said, "Yeah, I was in Missouri 6 hours ago." So then the person says to me, "Well, I'm very sorry, but you have to quarantine for 2 weeks before you can come in to see the doctor. I'm very sorry. That's our policy." So I pause. I'm not going to hang out for 2 weeks to take a 2-hour deposition. So I said to the person, "Well, maybe you don't understand. I just paid $2,500 to depose this doctor, and we're going to do the deposition." And so she pauses for a moment and she says, "Oh, you're here for a deposition. Oh, that's fine. Come on in. Not a problem." Now, I mentioned that story because what's the purpose of having these regulations that say, "Oh, well, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks if you leave the state of Illinois," which, by the way, I think the numbers in Missouri are a lot better than the numbers in Illinois at the present time, certainly Chicago. So I'm thinking, folks, you should want me in here. You shouldn't be upset about it. But it demonstrates the silliness of it, because just because it was a deposition all of a sudden, well, then it's okay, come on in. So I guess the coronavirus doesn't spread in depositions. It knows this is a deposition and is not a regular doctor's appointment. So, you know, that just shows the silliness of it. But the best part about being in Chicago over this past weekend was I was wearing my bright red, it's almost neon red Cardinals mask with the Cardinals emblem on both sides of the face mask. And I got a lot of nasty looks from folks in Chicago up there in Cubs country. But I enjoyed just proclaiming Cardinal Nation while I was in Chicago over the weekend. So that was a lot of fun. I don't know if you had a chance to watch SNL over the weekend. Now, from my perspective over the last few years, a lot of SNL has been rather cringeworthy. But I will tell you that the casting of Jim Carrey as Biden is simply genius. And I'm not going to give a spoiler alert. I was talking to Dave Klein before the show started, and I know you've got it set up on your DVR to watch. So there's no spoiler alert here. I'm not giving anything away. But from my perspective, the best skit was Kate McKinnon as a psychic. And the setup, there's, again, no spoilers here, but the setup is four friends wander into a psychic shop to have their futures told, only the skit takes place in December of 2019. So hilarity ensues, I think, is the phrase that's used. So that SNL, definitely catch it if you missed it over the weekend. You know, today is an interesting day because in Supreme Court news, you've heard it reported here on KMOX earlier today, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, she was approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee for a confirmation vote by the entire U.S. Senate. Now, that vote is expected to take place this evening. The last time I checked, it was about 7 p.m. was the anticipated time for the vote. So that's going to take place today. So because that's coming up, we're going to be talking today to acclaimed UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh. He's a Washington Post columnist, frequently appears on network television. I've seen him on Fox News. I've seen him on Laura Ingraham's show. I've seen him elsewhere talking about constitutional law issues. So I wanted Eugene Volokh to join us today, and he'll be joining us later in the show, because there were some issues raised in the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearing that I want to break down, not the nitpicky silliness of taking political posturing during a confirmation hearing, but the issues that are raised that will impact you, that will impact me when the Supreme Court gets the addition, I think, of Justice Amy Coney Barrett. I think that's a foregone conclusion. So we're going to talk to Gene Volokh as the show unfolds today, because it's also Free Speech Week. Now, and that concluded, I think, on Saturday. But you know, don't you love all of these weeks and days that are just arbitrarily picked? I don't know who picks these things. I'm not sure that Free Speech Week is as popular as Talk Like a Pirate Day or National Donut Day, which my daughter used to go to a donut shop on Talk Like a Pirate Day, and they give you free donuts if you walk in dressed as a pirate. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. But Free Speech Week just concluded, and so I thought that was another opportunity to bring up some free speech issues with Gene Volokh. So we will be talking to him as the day unfolds. We've also got Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft online today to discuss some topics. We're going to talk to noted author James Rollins. We're also going to hear from our very own Amy Markscores, who is participating in a benefit for Backstoppers. What a fantastic charity. So we've got a jam-packed show for you this afternoon. Thanks for hanging with us. Brad Young filling in for Mark Reardon on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on KMOX.
Welcome back to The Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. And of course, you know the presidential election's coming up. But what's interesting is it's forecast to have the highest voter turnout in 112 years, with a record 150 million ballots expected to be cast, representing 65% of eligible voters. So to break down how this will apply to us here in Missouri, I wanted to talk to and go straight to the guy who knows. Joining us this afternoon is Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft. Secretary Ashcroft, welcome to KMOX.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Wouldn't it be great if we broke records on turnout?
It would be. It would be fantastic. And from your perspective, do you think that's something that just might happen this year?
I think it's a real possibility. I can't tell you for sure it will, because normally when we project what's going to happen, we use the past. And frankly, we've never had a year like 2020, at least in my lifetime.
Yeah, in more ways than one. So speaking of one of the ways that we've been impacted, COVID-19, how has that impacted your preparation for our election? And what steps has your office taken to try to mitigate the potential impact of the virus on our election?
Well, the first thing, the legislature passed and the governor signed a bill and made it into law so that any resident of the state of Missouri that's a registered voter could vote by mail if they didn't want to have to go to their polling places. They also expanded absentee ballots to provide increased access to another means of avoiding voting in person on Election Day. But working with Missouri's 116 election authorities, we've worked to make sure that it would be safe when people do go vote in person, either absentee in person or on Election Day. Our office has supplied probably thousands of gallons of hand sanitizer, tens of thousands of face masks, face shields, distancing strips, posters to remind people to stay 6 feet apart or more. We've worked with manufacturers to find out how we can disinfect equipment between voters to make sure it's safe. And I got to tell you, the election authorities across the state have done a fabulous job. We've had three successful elections that were safe and secure and healthy under COVID. We're going to have another one in 8 days and make it four in a row here in Missouri.
Well, Secretary Ashcroft, you mentioned two things. Our elections should be safe and secure, and you've talked about the safe. But on the secure part, one concern that I've had with this expansive mail-in voting or expansive absentee voting across the country is the secure part. But your office litigated this up to the Missouri Supreme Court recently to make sure that the votes are secure when it comes to mail-in votes or absentee voting. What happened?
We did, and the court upheld the notary requirement. The idea being that we need to make sure that the individual that casts that ballot, that sends in that ballot envelope, is who they say they are. So everybody that's registered gets to vote once, but nobody gets to vote twice. And that's just part of what we do to make sure it's easy to vote in this state, it's transparent, but also everyone's vote counts equally.
Exactly. And because and that's the reason why Chicago is in Illinois and not in Missouri. You only get to vote once here.
But we don't set up polling booths in our cemeteries like they do in Chicago.
Yeah, my father passed away in 2007, and I told my wife, I wonder who he's going to vote for this year in Illinois.
But that is scary.
It is scary. But jokes aside, one of the things that's interesting is that we're not just 8 days out from an election. We're in the middle of the election right now. So we've talked a little bit about the increase in voter turnout, but are you also seeing an increased turnout from absentee voting or from mail-in or early voting?
We have seen a substantial increase in that. If it were not COVID, if it were not the 2020 we've had, I would have expected to see maybe a quarter of a million absentee/mail-in ballots. We have seen almost 700,000 of those requested as opposed to 250,000. I hope that means that more people are participating, and that those are people that would not have otherwise participated, but we won't know for sure until Election Day.
So we're talking to Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft, and we're talking about this increase in voting, but how has your office and what steps has your office had to take to handle this anticipated surge of voting?
We've done a lot of working with local election authorities to make sure they have the resources necessary for it. We've distributed $4.5 million of federal funds to 116 election authorities and pretty much said, use this however you need to deal with COVID during federal elections this year. We've retained several million of that to make sure that when they face a bill for all those mail-in and absentee ballots at the local election authority level, we can just say, send that bill to the state. We'll pay that for you. We've gotten out and done multiple statewide tours to make sure people know how they can vote and how the rules are different not what they should circle or check on the ballot. That's up to the listener. But what the possibilities are for getting about. We sent a mailing out, I believe, to just about every household in this state detailing how they could vote in person, how they could vote absentee in person, how they could get an absentee ballot that they'd send back, or how they could vote mail-in. We want every registered voter in the state to know that we want them to participate. When people that can participate don't, we lose their wisdom. And I think we could all agree that government needs all the wisdom we could give it.
Yeah, amen to that. We're talking to Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft. And, you know, last week there was some initial reports of some potential tampering in the election by foreign governments. And, of course, we heard that ad nauseum going back to 2016. But has your office had to work with the federal government to monitor or to assess potential threats or to share intelligence in terms of potential threats to the voting process?
We have not seen something that we said, hey, wait a minute, that's the Chi-Coms or the North Koreans or Russia. But we have been working with federal partners from the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, to the Director of National Intelligence for years. We continue to do that. We work with other states. We work with third parties. I just feel like it's our job to worry about that, so you as a voter can just go in and vote and you don't have to.
Secretary Ashcroft, as I've been talking to folks about the mail-in voting and the absentee voting, one of the things that people have asked me over the last few weeks is this. Will the fact that there is a surge or an increase in absentee or mail-in voting, is that going to delay our ability to know the outcome of elections across the state of Missouri?
I don't believe it is. I will be fully forthright with you. My fingers are a little bit crossed when I say that. We've never dealt with the numbers that we're seeing, but we have used every election this year to help prepare us better for the November election. We are in contact with our larger jurisdictions, and I do believe that we will have absentee and mail-in ballots and final results at the same approximate time as we have in years past. The only concern would be if we have very close elections, then, of course, you have to make sure everything is voted before you knew who won. But I believe we will know on Election Day. That's our goal, and we're working toward that.
Now, traditionally, you know, I've been following elections for years, just like you. And one of the things we always see during a presidential election in Missouri is that we see certain areas of the state are traditionally slower at getting those ballots counted and those results into the Secretary of State's office. So is those areas that are typically slower, are we going to see that same sort of trend this year, or is that, do you see that changing because of maybe a shift from in-person voting to more absentee voting?
I think you will probably still tend to see that. Frequently we give St. Louis County trouble because their results come in later. But in all honesty, they have so many polling places that it takes them longer, and it's appropriate for them to take the time that they do and make sure they get it correct. So I think you will see some of our smaller counties can report earlier because they don't have as many votes. But I'm confident that when, say, a St. Louis county takes longer, it will be because they are doing a good job, they're getting it right, and they have so many polling locations that they have to make sure they have correct before they turn those numbers in.
Secretary Ashcroft, I've only got 30 seconds, but quickly, do you see the potential for lawsuits or other legal challenges this year, more so than in recent past?
I do. I think our society has become more and more litigious. We've already been sued three times with regard to this election. I think it's unfortunate. I think all Missourians want the election to be over on November 3rd.
Hear, hear. Missouri Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft, thanks for joining us this afternoon on KMOX.
Thanks for having me.
And when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking to constitutional law professor. He's at UCLA, Eugene Volokh. We're going to break down some of the issues that were raised in the Amy Coney Barrett nomination, so don't go away. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon on KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon this afternoon. And, you know, Christmas is coming up, and I have a fantastic recipe for anyone who likes to read action novels that are thrilling and intelligent. Here's the recipe. Write this down. You take the gadgets from Mission Impossible. You combine them with the uncovering of historical artifacts like Indiana Jones. You add in the present-day solving of historical mysteries like National Treasure, and you make every character a genius in the areas of science, history, and archaeology. Actually, that's not my recipe. That's the recipe of most of the novels from New York Times bestselling author James Rollins. Mr. Rollins, thanks for joining us this afternoon on KMOX.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate it.
Hey, you have a new book out, Unrestricted Access, which is actually a collection of 12 short stories. Give us a taste of some of these stories that are in Unrestricted Access.
Well, it's quite the gamut. It's an entire breadth of my career. There are stories that I wrote early in my career to new stuff I wrote for this anthology. So there's some tie-in stories to my Sigma Force universe, which is a group of special forces soldiers that have been retrained in scientific disciplines to be basically field agents for DARPA, and they protect us against various threats. But also it's a little dabbling in horror, a little bit of I did a young adult fantasy short story for R.L. Stein. I did a sort of a point of view from a dog in a dogfighting ring for George R. R. Martin's anthology called Warriors. So it's a little bit of everything. It's sort of a treat of everything I happen to write and everything I happen to love to read.
Yeah, to me it was like not a potpourri, but it's like the plate that you get, the sampler platter of your material all in one novel.
Yeah, I got to do things in this novel, collection that I wasn't able to do in full-length novels. Like I paired up with Steve Barry, another writer. Basically, a lot of our common fan base has been clamoring for us to do a project together, but he's with a different house, so we really couldn't do that in a novel format, but we were able to do it in a short story format, so that was a great deal of fun to do. There's a new novella that appears in this story. It's sort of a mini novel featuring a very popular pair of characters I write about. It's Commander Tucker Wayne. He is a former Army Ranger, and he sort of goes about the field with his dog, Kane, a military war dog, and I get to write scenes from the dog's point of view because I didn't want to just do stories from one side of the leash of that relationship. I spent a lot of time talking to handlers and got that sort of a unique relationship between handler and dog, so I wrote scenes both from the handler's point of view, but also from Kane's point of view, the dog's point of view, to sort of take my readers and put them into the four paws of unique warrior.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in just a moment, but you're not only a graduate of Parkway West High School right here in the St.
Exactly.
Louis area, but you also graduated from Mizzou Veterinary School, right?
I did indeed, yep. As a matter of fact, a lot of my roots have little tips and little Easter eggs towards my Missouri roots. My real last name is a little bit of a tongue twister. So Rollins is a pen name. And I got the name James Rollins, because the University of Missouri Veterinary School is on Rollins Avenue. So I just sort of borrowed that name to be my pen name.
Yep. My wife is a proud graduate, and I still send money there for some of my kids who have gone to Mizzou. So, yeah, we're very familiar with Columbia. Now, we're talking to author James Rollins, whose latest book is Unrestricted Access. And, there are several short stories that give us kind of the backstories of some of your Sigma Force team, and which I got to tell you, it's the coolest idea on the planet that your Sigma Force team is under the Smithsonian Institute in a secret bunker. I mean, I couldn't dream up something that cool, but how does your background as a veterinarian provide a springboard to weave science-related themes into your thriller novels?
Well, again, I have a tendency to have basically historical mysteries in a lot of my novels, but I'm also looking at various aspects of science, those bits of history or science that make me go, what if, where's that headed, how's it going to challenge us in the future? And again, I lean a bit on my scientific background. Again, I was an undergraduate with a biology degree, graduate was with my veterinary degree. And so besides the science, of course, as I just sort of hinted at before, a lot of animals appear in my book. I have a sign language speaking gorilla in one of my books. I have a orphan jaguar cub that's a sidekick of another character in one of my books. So animals have a tendency to seep into my books besides my veterinary background.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the more impactful stories in Unrestricted Access focuses on the characters you just mentioned a few moments ago, the Army Ranger, Tucker Wayne, and his partner, his Army working dog, Kane. But your understanding, though, of the unique interrelationship between a military dog and his handler, that doesn't just arise from your veterinary background, does it? I mean, didn't you learn some of this when you took some USO tours overseas in Iraq and Kuwait?
Yeah, you know, I always got my antenna up looking for, you know, that next idea for a book. And so me and another five other authors went as a part of a USO tour to Iraq and Kuwait during the winter of 2010. One of the other authors with us was David Morrell, who created the character Rambo. So he was very popular. But again, being a veterinarian, I was distracted by the fact that there were men and women working with these dogs out in the field. And so I'd approach a few of them and ask them some questions about their dogs. So I was curious what their relationship was. Do they just treat their dogs as like a sidearm? Was it just a weapon to them? But I found that no, they actually have a very deep bond. These guys and girls, they sleep, train, eat with their dogs. I mean, they were on them 24/7. And I went to Lackland Air Force Base after I got back because I wanted to know more about this relationship, how they train these dogs, what these dogs are capable of, how they're reared. Again, just sort of got more depth about that. Then I leaned on my own veterinary medicine background in behavioral sciences to sort of construct the point of view of Kane, because I didn't want to do it authentically. I didn't want to do like a Disney version of a military war dog that breaks out in song halfway through the book. You know, I wanted to be authentic.
Yes.
That's
interesting.
I practiced writing them initially, and Tagger, which is a short story, not Tagger, Tracker that appears in this anthology, was my first attempt to write that pair of characters, and that story is in this anthology, as is the new novella featuring this pair of characters. And so I sort of honed my ability to write point of view from Kane. And initially, when they first started to appear in my short stories and my novels, I was getting feedback from a few readers saying, "Hey, you know, that seems outlandish. That seems like there's no way dogs could really do that." And at the same time, I was vetting these stories with these handlers that were willing to give me some first hands-on experience of their relationship with their dogs. And they were saying, if anything, Jim, you're pulling the reins back on what these dogs are really capable of. So again, it's a matter of, you know, truth is greater than fiction oftentimes, is that, you know, what I'm putting on paper sounds outlandish maybe to the average reader, but to that average handler, I was, if anything, putting some restraints on what these dogs are capable of doing.
Fascinating. Hey, we've only got about 30 seconds left, Mr. Rollins, but you know what's interesting is, particularly in Unrestricted Access, is that your storylines and plot lines go from the catacombs of Paris to even like electromagnetic pulse weapons. I mean, it's just the breadth of things in your storylines are fantastic. Very quickly, though, which takes more time, researching your novels or actually writing them?
It's about even, actually. It's about right down the middle. I spend about 3 months doing my research, and then it takes me about 6 months to write the novel. But during the writing the novel process, half that time is research also. So it's about almost right down the middle, half and half.
Well, it shows in the product. James Rollins, author of Unrestricted Access. Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon on KMOX.
Anytime, Brad. Thank you.
You are welcome. It's a must. You got to put that on your Christmas list. It's a must. Hey, we're going to take a break here, but we'll be back with more here on the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in for Mark on KMOX.
Get home fast and informed. Total Information PM starts weekdays at 4 on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX and KMOX.com.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in for Mark today. He should be back tomorrow, you know, assuming he doesn't overindulge while he's in Vegas, but we're counting on him being back here in the saddle tomorrow. You know, one of the stories that has been gaining traction the last couple of days is a change of COVID from being something that's primarily centered in metropolitan areas to now impacting rural areas. So, you've heard of Dr. Randy Tobler. Of course you had. He's been on for years on our sister station, 97.1 FM Talk. His show airs on Saturday mornings, but Dr. Tobler is also the CEO of Scotland County Hospital, which is a rural area in northern Missouri. So I wanted to get his take on how COVID is impacting rural areas. Dr. Tobler, welcome to the AM side of the dial here on KMOX.
Hey, how you doing, Brad? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's great to talk to you. Now, COVID-19, of course, is on the rise in America, but in particularly rural America. Just very briefly here, in the Midwest, cases have climbed an average of 60% over the past 2 weeks, compared to 35% nationally. So what's behind, Dr. Tobler, what's behind this increase of the positivity rate in rural America?
I'm not certain that it's any one thing. I think a lot of it has to do with a little more prolific testing availability that has a lot to do with it, both, you know, regionally and nationally. But in addition, rural folks are ruggedly independent. They have tended to resist some of the initially, at least, variable messaging that came from the government. You know, don't buy masks, buy masks. Hmm. And despite us here at the hospital and our medical staff and the public health officials encouraging people to buy masks, they're just, you don't see a lot of that going on. And my observation when I come down to my home in St. Louis, my hometown, and visit my folks or other metro areas, is that there's just a tremendous difference in compliance with mask wearing and, frankly, for social distancing as well. And I think it's a chickens coming home to roost kind of scenario, frankly. I think that people are just we see a lot of open church attendance going on, which is a good thing for church attendance and spirituality, maybe not so much for COVID. We saw over the summer, as things started to accelerate in July and August, we saw a lot of delayed graduation parties and proms and so forth. So I think it's a confluence of more testing and people getting tested just because they were at an event. And so we have a lot of asymptomatic positives. But our current positive rate, I just checked it today, is our rolling 7-day average is 33%. One in three people we're testing in our 4-county area, we do most of the tests for our 4-county area and part of southeastern mm-hmm. Iowa, are positive. That's remarkable.
Yeah, that's very high. But, you know, initially when the testing started, it was primarily in the metropolitan areas because that was where there was the most population density and the most chance of transmission. But you mentioned about testing, but that increase in testing, that can account for a lot of this increase because a lot of the rural areas are just now getting access to testing. Is that right?
Well, we've had the testing, but it's been delayed testing through the reference labs. And then when the state started allocating some of the rapid turnaround testing, those were deployed in various areas around the state, and we started having access to that. That did it, too. And I guess we also need to factor in, of course, the start of school. I mean, there was definitely a spike then. But we were hovering at about 10 to 12%. Give or take for a few weeks there after school started, and then bingo, within the last couple of weeks, it has just skyrocketed. So it clearly is a community spreading event now. And I don't see that we're going to be able to get our hands around it in terms of changing people's mindset much, because the reality is that we have very few hospitalizations. Once in a while, we've had to transfer someone to a higher level of care. But for the most part, people do pretty well with this. They may be knocked on their butt with fatigue for a while.
Sure.
They may have some other, residual problems. But, there's an inverse relationship between age. When you talk about asymptomatic COVID, there's an inverse relationship between age and the percentage of asymptomatic infection. And so the young people often don't even know they have it, where they're positive because they're a contact trace. And of course, as you get older, it's more likely you will have symptoms. So it's an interesting time. Most of the schools here are not doing remote, and except as an opt-in on request type of a process. And so I think that's really had a lot to do with driving some of this as well.
We're talking to Dr. Randy Tobler, who's normally over on our sister station, 97.1, but he's taken some time out of his busy schedule to join us this afternoon here on Camo X. And Dr. Tobler, when I'm not here on Camo X, I'm a practicing attorney here in St. Louis, and my law firm defends companies and defends insurance companies in civil litigation, employment law, and workers' compensation claims. So my firm is defending a large number of COVID workers' compensation claims in both Missouri and Illinois. But thankfully, mm-hmm. the vast majority of these claims are from people who've had only mild symptoms or nothing that's catastrophic. I've got a few catastrophic, but for the most part, most of them are rather mild. Are we seeing just an increase in positive cases, or are we also seeing an increase in hospitalization rates and or an increase in death rates?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing, of course, as we see more cases, we will see more hospitalizations, and that has been reflected in national and regional data. That said, the number of hospitalizations, I think, as a factor compared to the case rate, is less than it was at the beginning. And similarly, death rates are not paralleling the case rate surge like they did in the beginning. And that's because we've learned how to manage this much, much better, especially in the inpatient setting. We know a lot better now what to do to prevent people from going from, you know, a 1 or 2 day hospitalization to the ICU, and then from ICU, unfortunately, in some cases, to death. And by getting on top of it early and, you know, with a combination of remdesivir and steroids and anticoagulants, that's really sort of the triple crown of treatment at this point for many patients. It seems as though that, plus even the way patients are positioned when they have severe illness, seems to have been making a big difference. So while you see cases rising exponentially, we're not seeing the same increase as we did relative to that increase in deaths and hospitalizations.
Excellent.
So far, we're not overwhelmed, and I know there's places that are approaching that, but as far as I know, in the region and in Missouri, I don't think that any hospitals have had no room in the inn when it was needed.
Very good. Hey, we're talking to Dr. Randy Tobler. Make sure you catch the Randy Tobler Show every Saturday morning on 97.1 FM Talk. Dr. Tobler, thanks for joining us this afternoon on KMOX.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, Brad.
Hey, and after this break, we'll be right back here on the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in. Don't go away.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.